In this episode, we talk about sexual health and reproductive rights with a Daisy Fisher. I hope you enjoy listening.
Hi everyone. So with me, I have a Daisy Fisher. Hi, Daisy.
Hi, my name is Daisy Fisher. I'm a lawyer, creative, a writer, and a sexual and reproductive health rights consultant. And I'm excited to be here. I've been here before years ago, but it's good to be back. So hi.
Hi. Yeah, actually, I remember that episode. It was a lot of fun. It's been a minute, actually. So I want you to give a brief intro about your work so far and what's changed since the last time you were here and what's happening now with you.
So I think the last time we're here, we talked about, I think, polyamory or love or something along those lines. I think what has changed now for me is I'm focusing more on encouraging people to know things about sexual health, the laws that's around that, and also digital safety. So at the intersection of those three things, because as young persons, young women, we cannot deny that we interact with sex, and we interact with sex within the digital space, you know, with the world we currently live in. And what does that look like for us? What does safety look like for us? What does it look? Yeah, basically, that's just what I'm currently focusing on right now.
So I'm wondering in what capacity you currently work in that direction.
Okay, good question. So I have a thing where I pick a theme for the month. Mm-hmm. And on my social media, I talk about something along that theme, right? I talk about the sexual reproductive health aspects. I talk about the rights and, you know, legal provisions. And I talk about what does that mean when you look at using technology or the digital space. So for September, we talked about intimate partner violence, talked about, you know, what does that mean? What does that look like? Mm-hmm. What are the little things we do? What are the little things we say or think every day that, you know, adds to the problem? I also talked about what you should know, how the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act and the subsequent laws in people's states are tools that can protect people from a wide range of, like, violence and also intimate partner violence. Then I had a live where I talked about hashtag couple prank, which, you know, is a form of content a lot of people who do relationship, you know, YouTubes or relationship couple Instagrams, where they prank each other. And some of those pranks feature forms of intimate partner violence. I know I talked about the four common pranks that feature intimate partner violence, right? And what type of, like, forms of intimate partner violence you would see in that content, and how that type of content over the past almost 10 years, if you look at YouTube, really has normalized intimate partner violence, which we now rebrand as toxic behavior, which is actually a lot of, like, either emotional violence, acts of physical violence, controlling behavior like smashing your partner's PS5, or, you know, burning a designer bag, or pretending to be drunk, where you kind of, like, make your other partner uncomfortable with his they, you know, make sexual advances at you when you are pretending to be drunk while the other partner assumes you're drunk. You have other things like, you know, who are actively gaslighting their partner. You have infidelity pranks, all those cheated on you pranks where people from one partner gets very violent. And people are in the comments like, I like it, she doesn't take shit. I love how she beat his ass up. What kind of prank is that? That goes to normalizing intimate partner violence online on the internet. So even when people open up and say, oh, this is what I'm going through with my partner, people are like, it's a sign he loves you. He's possessive. He's, you know, he's a possessive man. We all see those content where people are romanticizing controlling behavior, you know, whether it be financial or just possessiveness, stalking, gaslighting. Now we see situations where people use technology to abuse their partner, cloning partners' phones, hacking into their WhatsApps, stalking them with Google Maps, and then revenge porn when the relationship ends, you know, things like that. So basically that's what we talked about in September. That's what that looks like for me currently.
Yeah, you raised a lot of interesting things, and that leads me to my next question. Basically, in your experience so far with current line of work that you're doing, what are some key challenges that Nigerian queer folk often face when navigating, like, sexual health conversations and reproductive rights conversations, and how do you think these things can be addressed?
Okay, good. I think one of the first challenges would be we have a healthcare system that doesn't afford us free or relatively cheap public healthcare that is easily accessible. You want to go to the general hospital, you can get there at 7 a.m., you won't see a doctor till 1 in the afternoon, and that affects every Nigerian, right? So when you look at other factors, like many queer folks are either struggling financially or are super young, not everybody can afford to pick up a card with a private hospital that will cost them a particular amount of money, mm-hmm. or have job security where they can pay for health insurance that will be deducting money off their, you know, I know every, you know, there are things like that. Yeah, people who, even when they have jobs where they have access to this medical health care insurance, the things they would need attention for might not be covered by the insurance or the package that their workplace picks. I think the first issue is oftentimes access to like affordable mm-hmm. or cheap like healthcare in the first place. That's number one. I think another issue people would face would be the fear of stigmatization. People are afraid, like, do they open up where they go to? Can they open up? Oh, I'm a person that is living with, you know, HIV or AIDS. There are situations where I was on a show and someone talked about someone that went to check up for Anna Watts. The doctor called the police on the guy. And that is a huge breach of doctor-patient confidentiality. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's another issue people face, the fear of stigmatization and discrimination. I think another issue people face is the lack of representation in relation to like medical policies that go out. While it's getting better, you see people who are openly queer, openly living with HIV and AIDS on boards that make decisions about national medical policies. But when you look at implementation across states, what you would see in your local government, it doesn't really mirror that diversity. And while NGOs are trying to bridge that gap and they're doing a lot of value transformation trainings and reorientation, it's still a very long way to go. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
I think another issue people face is that the kind of contraceptives and healthcare queer people would need is oftentimes very expensive. And so the only way they can get access to it is through, like, you know, non-governmental organizations. You don't have it. I mean, we're still even struggling to make sure sanitary pad is free for teenage and young, you know, women that menstruate in the country. Not to now talk of how difficult it is to get a dental dam as a queer woman, or to even just talk about the expense of getting PEP or PrEP, you know, for other queer persons. And so these are like a couple of challenges, really.
In terms of one, the realistic self for me is sexual, like, what's the general word I'm looking for now? But I'm talking female condoms. Yeah.
Contraceptions,
thank you. And dental dams, all of that. You don't even say stuff like that, not to talk about how accessible they now be.
Yeah, the pharmacist, the chemist, you have this stuff. When you talk about, even though they talk a big game about making contraceptive more accessible, I know they have a blueprint to make it more accessible for young people, but you look at all the things that are subsidized by the Society of Family Health, and I never have come across any dental dam that is subsidized by Society for Family Health. I've not come across PEP or PrEP that is subsidized by Society for Family Health. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah,
same thing with abortion pills. Either, even though abortion is, you know, permissible with the national guidelines, meeting certain conditions. Let me just add that to it.
Can you share what those conditions are, Remy?
For example, if someone has underlying health issues that threaten their physical health, if you're in Lagos State, it threatens your physical health or your life. Generally in the country, it threatens your life, and yeah, the child is not a fit fetus. You also have people who are victims of rape, or people who suffer from severe suicidal inclination or depression. So you have like those people qualify for access. Safe termination of pregnancy is a word that is used in the policy anyway, not abortion itself, but it's what we're talking about still, semantics. So you see all these things, you see that it's actually the organizations that are producing them in the country, like DKT, that make sure that their products are somewhat affordable. But even still, they're very expensive if you think about it. And oftentimes, if you are someone who has, and I think, and anyone who is a queer Nigerian has to actively follow one or two NGOs in their social media space to keep abreast, you always have a call where they say, oh, we're out of this or we're out of that. So that already clues you into like some of the challenges also.
Yeah, that makes sense. Personally, I wanted to say, when you're talking about dental dams, I've never seen dental dams that have been subsidized. I've never ever seen a dental dam in the first place. I have ones actually. I've just seen pictures. I still haven't seen one up front. And that's a shame, really.
It is.
Right? Yeah. What are some of the most common misconceptions or myths surrounding LGBTQ plus sexual health, reproductive rights that you've heard so far?
Just normal myths and misconceptions that lead to active discrimination that literally impacts the well-being of people. You have the classic one, it's dirty and it's unholy. I'm sorry to say, you have the, I don't know, you also have those who say it doesn't exist in Nigeria, it doesn't happen in Nigeria.
Yeah.
And then people just limit it. I think it's also the misconceptions. People limit it to oral sex or anal sex, and it's way much more than that. It's people's access to even maternal care, because some queer people are married, right?
Yeah.
So access to maternal care, managing, for example, persons who live with HIV and AIDS. It's also how do people who are LGBTQ and also persons with disability, how do they navigate access to, you know, healthcare, knowing, bearing in mind that a lot of this, our physical institutions, the physical structures of the institutions are not even accessible. They lack accessibility. So, you know, there are also other angles, for example, for gender non-conforming persons that want to access affirming therapy, stuff like that. So there's a wide range of issues. I think some of the misconceptions is people just limit it to oral sex and anal sex, that lesbians and TBs or homos and whatever other things they call, they say, if it's way much more. A lot of sapphic women are married to men, a lot of queer men are married to women. You have issues with people accessing maternal care, maternal health. So there's a really wide range. I think it's just the lack of understanding and sometimes the reluctance to even change one's narrow perspective. Those are some of, you know, the misconceptions you see. So pretty much that's it, really. There are more, but those are the ones
that I wanted to talk about, a specific misconception around bisexuals and pansexuals, where there's this misconception that they are more likely to pass STIs to people, because that is one that I have heard so far that is interesting to me. But in terms of all of this that we've mentioned, I'm wondering what we can do within, so for example, you, your work, and then individuals who are probably listening, what we can do within our own spheres to reduce, I guess, how rampant these myths are.
Well, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. First of all, I have to agree with you with the last point you made on misconceptions. Biphobia, panphobia, we usually call it biphobia. It covers people who have multisexualities versus monosexuals, and let's not get into semantics, whatever they mean. But when you see sexualities that fall under multisexualities, like bisexuality, pansexuality, homosexuality, there's always that navigate. That's you see that misconception that, oh, because a person is, they feel attraction to a gender similar to theirs and different from theirs, or, you know, the opposite gender, another gender, whatever way it's described, or, you know, the person and not their gender, therefore they're automatically promiscuous. And this is very harmful. We see this playing how the statistics show that persons who are multisexual experience more sexual coercion, limited control when it comes to condom negotiation or contraceptive negotiation. They experience actual physical harm and sexual coercion, like I mentioned earlier, from partners of various gender, actually. So that's a very interesting dynamic to see, that people who are slut-shaming people at the same time harm them because of that viewpoint, and deny them access to also, you know, basically have full, robust, consenting, pleasurable sex. So at the end of the day, like I said, all of these misconceptions are harmful. Everything you say in ignorance is harmful. If you understand what I mean? It's hurtful and it's harmful also. It is what it is, really. Now, what we can do is, I think right now where the world is, we're at a place where people are very vocal. When someone says something, even when they're certain, there's always someone to say, oh, I don't really think that is so. There's new research coming up. People are always conversing. And I think that's what we can do as people, to keep an open mind and to keep learning and unlearning. You understand what I mean? And I think that's all we owe ourselves, to learn and learn. A lot of persons, advocates, also just individuals themselves, themselves and also, of course, non-governmental organizations, put out a lot of informative, you know, content out there. And I think it's important for persons and members of the community to engage with these things, to just keep an open mind, you know. You might be thinking, what's my business with trans max people have sex for? It kind of is your business anyway. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying because one day you'll date one, no, but because when you have the information, when you are informed, when you're in a position where you can help somebody else, you can defend somebody, you can push or advocate for something, you are just automatically better informed. And, you know, violence and confusion strives where there's ignorance, really. Ignorance is weaponized, and I think that's what we like owe it all to ourselves. And also just generally as Nigerians, when you see all this, you know, the National Assembly is coming out with this on that on health, it just take a few minutes, read the article, you know, read the article, just be careful the links you click on WhatsApp because of hacking. But however, also just read the article, find out what it's about, know what kind of resources the state has in place for you. When you know what the state has in place for you, you can defend yourself anywhere. You can ask for what is due for you. Mm-hmm. Because the people who are out there sometimes are ignorant. Sometimes they really just don't care. Sometimes they are too lazy to do what they have to do. And you need to let them know, like, I need this to be done. I have to have access to this because, I mean, what are you paying tax for anyway? You know?
Yeah, so yeah, I get you. I totally get what you mean. So this actually leads me to the next question, which is, what are some of the legal victories we've had over the years that has significantly, not over the years, because yeah, maybe over the last 5 years, that has significantly improved the lives, the sexual health and reproductive rights of the queer community, of the Nigerian queer community specifically? Do you know of any?
So based off a conversation I had at African Pride Accelerate, I think one major thing that a lot of legal practitioners will agree and NGOs will agree is that having the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act, which came out a year before the SSMP, which is ironic. Oh, Nigeria, my country. The state is like, yeah, don't be violent. But the next year is literally very violent. But yeah, okay, I will not drag today. I will not drag National Assembly, not today. Maybe another day on Twitter. Anyway, so yeah, as I was saying, so we have that particular act, which has been domesticated in over, I think, currently 32 states and country. Of course, those different states have pulled out certain things and included certain things depending on, you know, social, cultural, political landscape in, you know, various states. However, at the basis, you see that a lot of queerphobic violence that persons experience, the act somewhat covers or protects them from it. For example, the part of the act that protects against rape, protects against assault, protects against luring somebody with the intent to commit danger, which can be similar to situations of keto that queer people experience. You have things that, you know, protect people against even state violence by state actors, like that's police harassment, which a lot of queer people experience.
Yeah,
you have protection against emotional, psychological abuse, financial abandonment, isolation by family, and also, yes, isolation by family, which is for the intent to commit assault or to control a person's life, which can be linked to, what's this thing called? This thing that parents of queer people do with the conversion therapy, yes, which you can use to have a defense against conversion therapy. I think what people need to know is you need to look for the Violence Against Persons Prohibition law in your state, read up on the provisions, what does it provide for you. And one of the hallmarks of this particular act is that it uses the International Criminal Court's definition of rape. So that means male victims of rape can now come forward to use the act to ask for justice. It can be used to cover marital rape, even though I don't think I've seen any case where someone has used it for that, because a part of it repeals other sections in the criminal code, penal code, that is covered in the Violence Against that. But of course, we don't really have that culture of really pushing jurisprudence in relation to identity and crimes in Nigeria, like you'll see in other countries, for example. We have more of that around maybe like normal criminal law, like crimes and like financial crimes, property related issues. You see where, you know, the court is placed as a person to define and interpret stuff. But we don't really have it that commonly when it relates to issues of identity. Identity now means in both gender and sexual, you know, identity and stuff like that. But hopefully Nigeria will get there, I guess. But So I think that's a common thing one needs to know. I think it's important for people to also have contacts of, for example, Lagos State has the Lagos State Domestic and Sexual Violence Agency. So they respond to all cases of domestic violence or sexual violence within the state. It's important for people to know if their own states have, the states where they live have these things. It's important for them to at least know that when you get to the police station, you should ask to speak with the human rights desk. Most often than not, they are the officers that are reorientated to handle human rights violations and sexual minorities with the delicacy that the front desk at the police station will not have. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? So the resources that people have access to them, of course, is often always, if not best, to have the contact of an NGO, a visible NGO that caters to also LGBTQ persons in your state that you can call or have access to. There are lots of lawyers pro bono also paid with these NGOs, so they oftentimes can be at your beck and call, meaning like they can come to your rescue per se. And I think in this world of digital age, it's very important to document as many things as you can, every altercation, do a voice recording, even if it's to go live, or you can't, you know, keep your device away to record every scenario. I mean, we've seen at the end, after the end of the entire, let's put it that way. You know, it doesn't really end because protest has still online, but yeah, after the end of the, you know, physical protest and the violent response of the government, we're seeing the power of social media and technology in tackling police brutality and extortion and just, of course, violence. Really. So these are the things that as a quiet person, you're kind of forced to know how to navigate the digital space, because that is where you find companionship, that's where you find friendship, that's where you find if you can find all these important things online, community, friendship, love, family, found family, you can, of course, you know, find the resources to also stay safe in a country that doesn't respect privacy, that doesn't respect human rights at times, as we see even for people who are not even LGBTQ. So I think these are the
Well, the last few things that you said just brings me to my last question, which is basically recommending organizations, resources, legal services that listeners can turn to for support on further information in terms of sexual health and reproductive rights. Do you have somebody to recommend?
Yeah, so I know that we have Vision Springs Initiative in Lagos, Nigeria. I think places I know are kind of limited to Lagos and Abuja. And I think I would advise people to do it. In every state, there's always an organization that is a part of a network across the state. It could be a network against trafficking. It could be a network against child abuse and neglect, or child trafficking or whatever. The networks against flooding, and they offer relief in flood disaster areas to families. It really is a network on almost everything. Of course, oftentimes what you see in these organizations are headed by older non-LGBTQ persons. However, our lives are filled with a lot of intersecting issues. Every time it's not all about, like, maybe, you know, you needing access to free condoms, right? It could be other things. So I would advise you, you know, just do a little bit of research. In Nigeria, I already mentioned, in Lagos, I mentioned Vision Springs. We also have other organizations. I've mentioned the Domestic Violence Agency. They are very, very good. When I mean they're very good, they work with family units across police stations, across the local government, and they have your back. Whatever secret you have, I assure you, they've had it before and they're there to support you. They are well-trained. They do not discriminate. Not to toot the horn, of course, every governmental agency may disappoint you, but based off the experience of, you know, working with them. So I think that's pretty much it. For Lagos, you also have tiers, right? However, there are other places in other states, but do your research now, because now it is right. People offer services, but under each administration, there are oftentimes issues. And if you're not comfortable with an organization, with their approach to something, or you've heard something about someone and you're not comfortable, of course, if I'm going to give them glowing recommendation to you, you're just going to be like, this girl just mentioned all the bad people.
I totally understand you.
So, but when you look at tiers, when you look at where these organizations, I know they focus on women and sexual, like, reproductive health rights, consistent. That's why I mentioned them. I think that's pretty much what I would say for now.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing. And thank you so much for coming on this episode to discuss this with me.
Thank you for having me.
That was an insightful conversation with Adeze Fraser. Some of these things we have heard before, but it doesn't hurt to have them echoed again. I hope you learned something new. Until our next episode, this is Rainbow, your host.